We know March Madness is officially upon us, and while we know many of our listeners out there will be tuned into the action at hand, we got a special topic to discuss that's been on our minds lately over here at the New 24, as we have been pondering the past few weeks over which given route provides basketball's young talent with the best pathway to the pros. In an era where we know the money and fame that comes with being a high-profile prep-level star is coming in at a rate faster than ever. What's up, everybody? You're listening to Second Chance Points, an extension of the New 24 podcast. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined by my co-host, Torrence Stagger, to talk about an item that many people have opinions about in regards to which route is the better path for the stars of tomorrow to take between the NBA G League, Overtime Elite, and the NCAA. And let's get right into it. We know under the league's current CBA that players can't enter the NBA until the year they happen to turn 19 years old. Not too long ago, the only option a top prospect had outside of going to college was to go and play professionally overseas, as we saw Brandon Jennings do, bypassing the college ranks to play out in Europe almost 20 years ago before getting selected by the Milwaukee Bucks at number 10 overall in 2009, a path that LaMelo Ball of the Charlotte Hornets also followed in recent times, playing internationally in Lithuania and Australia before garnering his NBA All-Star status. Now, one has a well full of options to pick from in their quest to play in the association. I know back in a previous episode of the New 24 podcast, Torrence, you mentioned how you thought the NBA instilling the one-and-done rule did more harm to college basketball than good, in your opinion. A sentiment that I know you're not alone in sharing, as many others have also stated the same thing across columns over the years in its various segments. But for those who might think otherwise or can't really see the true value in having a series of avenues that players can choose from to utilize and reach the NBA, what makes having programs such as the G League or Overtime Elite around so invaluable?
It's just the whole idea of development. The opportunity to work on your game in as many different forms as possible. College ain't work out for everybody, whether it's academically, whether it's fit, whether it's profile, whether, you know, you coming from a different country. It could be a multitude of reasons. But, I mean, the game of basketball is the game of basketball. It's one of the, it's not like football where the physicality of it would deter you from picking younger guys. You know, your body ain't developed yet to even play at that level in the league. I mean, the same could be true. We see in the NBA where guys like Victor, KD, others had to develop strength over time, but that really didn't, that didn't stop KD from averaging 20. And just the idea of getting paid, you know, like this NIL thing is pretty new. And guys always got paid under the table, but they weren't getting the value that they deserved. And going to those other outlets, it might help a guy who feels like his family's in a situation they need to get paid in instead of going the college route. So it's definitely invaluable.
What makes having programs such as the G League or Overtime Elite so invaluable to the league, in my opinion, it gives guys that have the aspirations of playing in the association another path in their basketball apprenticeship, is the way I would like to put it. Like you said, Torrence, college, as we know, whether you're in academia or not, it's not always the route for everybody. Even the most educated people will tell you that. Some folks are better off going to a trade school, learning various things to make money and become successful in America. That's the way I look at it when it comes to the basketball side of things. When you're in the G League or Overtime Elite, you're able to access facilities 24/7. You're getting a true firsthand experience of what it's like to be a professional. You may not be at the highest level, but you're being compensated for on-the-job training. That's what I like about it. And when I say being compensated for on-the-job training, I'm not just talking about like monetarily, which is important, but you're learning firsthand directly from pros, be it guys that are your teammates or guys that once played in the game but have now gone on to the other side in the coaching realm. So that's what I like about it. It gives guys options I think about the story that Kevin Garnett always talked about when he was looking at colleges. And he said one time he was at the University of Michigan when Steve Fisher was the head coach. And he said the one thing that bothered him is after going through the visit and whatnot, he really wanted to play basketball. And they told him the gym is closed. And he was saying that just didn't sit right with me. And that's what led to Kevin Garnett saying, I'd rather just decide to go from high school into the NBA realm, an option that we no longer have. But with the G League and Overtime Elite being around, guys can say, hey, I don't necessarily have to take that college route. I could just go full time into what I want to do, and that's becoming a professional basketball player. And although I may not be at the NBA level just yet, I'm one step closer to my dream becoming a reality.
Yeah, and like you said, the apprenticeship part, I really like that. It's the whole education factor of it. Like, immediately what came to mind was the Isaiah Thomas clip from First Take when he was speaking about LeBron, when he was like, you can't track LeBron's basketball education the way you can track the guys from back in his day. You know, he talked about his coach out west at Proviso, right? What
St.
school?
Joseph, St.
St.
Joseph High
Joseph,
School,
right?
Gene Pinkerton, rest in peace. Yep.
Right. And then
Seen him at Hoop Dream.
he goes from him to Bobby Knight. And then, you know, Chuck Daly, Michael Jordan. He has Dean Smith. He has Doug Collins, Phil Jackson. You know, Kobe Bryant has his father, who's a former number one pick and played basketball internationally. So he got a education on both sides, the European game that was coming to the league and the NBA. That he, like as we knew it back in those days. So this is just another avenue for guys to get that education outside of the traditional Jim Boeheim and Roy Williams, you know, those guys that we grew up on and the guys that we have today, like John Shire, Shaka Smart still around.
Yep, and Marquette, Nate Oates,
Yeah.
Alabama. Still got
Yeah.
Rick Pitino doing his thing at St. John's.
Yeah, because you know, I got guys like Coach Kyle and them, they hustling. Like, you know what I'm saying? They stuffing their pockets. So, you know, I mean, they sent guys to the league. I ain't going to say that. Kentucky done definitely put up some all-stars. I don't know how many NBA champions they done made outside of AD, like, off the top of my head, but pretty good pedigree. But yeah, that basketball education part is great. And you might not get the best education at the college level because, as me and you spoke about over the years, the men's college basketball game and the NBA are almost two different sports at this point.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely two different sports. And I want to start off with the three options that players have by talking about the G League. Ever since the 2019-20 season, players who are eligible to play in the G League but not yet eligible to enter the NBA are eligible to sign select contracts and earn an annual salary up to $125,000 per season, an amount that's significantly higher than the average G League salary of $40,500 for the 24-25 season. We know that the G League Ignite program, which launched back in April 2020, following the commitment from top prospect, now current Rockets guard Jalen Green, to serve as a feeder program to the NBA, was shut down following last season as the implementation of name, image, and likeness, known as the NIL, at the NCAA level diminished the need for it. However, it led to 12 other players alongside of Green who were part of the program to get drafted over his 4 seasons it was in existence, such as Jonathan Kuminga, Dyson Daniels, Scoot Henderson, Ron Holland, and Modest Buzelis, who were all selected in the lottery in their respective draft classes. Dink Pate, a G League Ignite alum who moved over to star as a member of the Mexico City Capitanes, is currently seeking to add his name to that list as well. When you take a look at the G League, from your vantage point, what would you say are the advantages as well as disadvantages to a prospect that is considering it as a legitimate option and wants to reach the big time?
Well, we know off rip that disadvantage is the money, of course. Especially depending on what level of player and prospect we talking about. We talking about a ESPN top 100. We talking about a guy in the top 50, the top 10. You know, that does make a difference. But the biggest advantage is the close proximity to the organization, to the NBA. You know, it's almost like European soccer being in the academy program to a certain extent. You know, so just being able to get your foot in the door in that route is cool. Like you look at the Lakers, one thing J.J. Redick said immediately in his press conference from day one is he wanted to have synergy between the Lakers and the South Bay G League team. We're going to be running the same program, the same plays. Our rookies, our second and third year players, like they pretty much can all expect to be going up and down. You know, you got Bronny, he got a guaranteed NBA contract, which in his situation, I think is great because, all right, you get him paid your value because, you know, he is who he is as far as name and shit. But he also has an opportunity to just develop and work on his game because he has a two-way deal. I can be around the best of the best during the week. And on the weekends, I can ply my trade with guys who got a lot of guys who are great players in the G League, but you know, for whatever reason, they haven't got that call up. So it's great competition for a lot of former players there. You can still get good work in, you know, still develop. So I think that's the biggest advantage for the G League. When I hear talks about expansion in the league, I always wonder, like, man, like maybe y'all should do more to push the G League, the importance of it, because you already got them teams in some nice B and C markets anyway. And then you got a lot of talent in the league.
Yeah, you talk about the talent that's in the league. I look at the talent that's in the G League. One of the biggest advantages I would say of going to the G League is that you're going to get a chance here and there to see some guys that have played a heavy dose of minutes in the NBA and some that have even found success in the league. Like I know a lot of people sometimes like to make a mockery of what Isaiah Thomas is doing, but Isaiah Thomas loves the game. Always his value hooping, no matter where it's at. And you see him doing his thing with the Salt Lake City Stars, the affiliate of the Utah Jazz. And it's somebody that appreciates guys trying to mentor the next generation and still keep their hoop dreams alive. That's a guy that a young player could get a chance to match up against and see how his game will fare against him. So I think that's one of the biggest advantages. You're going to see guys that were pros or all stars at some point in their career happen to be in the G League, and you get a chance to compete against these guys, all the while learning the nuances of what it takes to survive and operate in the NBA system. If, especially if you're coming from the high school ranks immediately into the G League ranks. So you're getting a firsthand professional experience of what it's like to not only figure out a way to carve out a role for yourself, but doing so against maybe not the best 450 players in the world, but guys that may have one point in time been in that conversation, or guys that are on the fringes of being in that conversation. Because you take a guy like Chris Middleton, who has been a multi-time all-star NBA champion. He got his breakthrough in the G League. And there's been several other guys, such as Pascal Siakam, Norm Powell, Fred VanVleet, guys that were part of the 2019 Raptor squad that also managed to become solid players in the league. So I think that's
Derek
one of the
White.
biggest advantages. Yeah, Derrick White as well, exactly, with the Boston Celtics. Now, one of the disadvantages I would say is that you're not getting five-star level treatment. You're not going to be in the best of hotels. And like you said, the money is not going to compare to NBA money. So you got to pick and choose what you consume wisely and what you get into. However, as far as like an on-court standpoint, I don't think it's bad at all because you're getting your initiation into what the professional basketball life is like. And you're also doing it stateside, where you don't have to get accustomed to dealing with different situations internationally that you might not be familiar with at this point in your life while you're still coming and growing of age.
And see, the travel part, that's something I want to touch on. I mean, like, a lot of this is speaking from a hypothetical point. Neither one of us are G League players, but, you know, we've done our research, read the stories. If you end up in a best-case scenario, you end up on a team with a former vet that's been in the league 10-plus years, a guy that really been around, you learn how to work. And that's the most important thing about all of this, man. Like, I was just telling my little brother about Anthony Edwards' conversation with Steve Kerr during the pre-draft workouts. When Kerr told him, man, you don't work hard. And you know, Ant feeling like, man, I just went out here and did everything you said. And it's like, nah, man, when you get to this level, it's a whole different working hard, a whole other different thing. Draymond had the famous interview with UCLA where he was
Yeah, with
talking
Rico
about,
Hine.
where he was just
Yeah.
talking about how guys like they jog through the finish, through some of the drills. See, in the G League, like you said, it's uncomfortable, but it's still almost a pro travel system in a way. You're gonna play your game, you're gonna go to your hotel, you gotta get prepared to go to the next city, which is way different than the college and the high school experience. Because you know, college, you got the games are primarily on the weekends. G League, not like that. And if you got a vet like Isaiah Thomas, hey, you can get to see that work. You can see how many shots you need to put up after practice, how you need to show up before practice. You can still get that work in and prepare yourself for the pros in the G League probably more than any other scenario with that.
No, I agree. And we brought up Jalen Green's name as a guy that was on the Ignite squad and was one of the main faces when that program was in existence. He had the pleasure and privilege of learning not only firsthand from Brian Shaw as his coach, who, as we know, played as a member of the Orlando Magic and the Los Angeles Lakers beside Shaquille O'Neal, as well as Kobe Bryant, and won a couple of championships with those guys. He had a chance to learn from him as well as Jarrett Jack, a former NBA player who was playing on the G League Ignite and is now an assistant coach under J.B. Bickerstaff with the Detroit Pistons. He got a chance to learn how to work. And that's why when he entered the league, I think the transition proved to be rather seamless, even in spite of his struggles. And you could tell having a guy like a John Lucas in his corner when he was on the bench out in Clutch City proved to be a vital force and component in his career that's helped him transcend to where he is today. Like when you have those type of senseis that you can learn from as a young guy, I don't think it gets any better than that because you're not going to always find that at the collegiate level.
Nah, you're not gonna always get that. And with how things are nowadays, it's a different scenario. You go to the G League, you going there to get your work in. If you going to the NCAA, that's a whole different set of expectations.
And just speaking firsthand from guys that I know who have played high-level Division I basketball, I can say that like when it comes to the one-on-one skills training, you might not always be able to get that over the course of the season the way that you can at the G League level, where you're being paid to perform. Whereas when you're at a Division I program or university, you might have to go to study hall, or that coach don't have the time, or may not be willing to make that time for you because he might be married to another player that he recruited and brought in there that was considered to be his guy.
Yeah, I'm sure the G League got some horror stories that's kind of similar to that too now, though. I don't think everything just rosy,
No,
you
it's
know.
not. I'm not saying that it is. I mean, one of the things I'll say too is a disadvantage of being in the G League. You may not get a chance to see scouts as often as you would at the collegiate level. That could be a downside as well in some cases or situations. So that's something that guys have to consider when seeking to weigh out the pros and cons of being in the G League. I know it's definitely not rosy though, for damn sure.
Yeah, nah, but it's a great, like I said, G League, when back in the day when it was called the D League, it definitely had a stigma to it. But the G League rebranded, it has worked out. It's a lot better of a system. And shit, it's even benefited some coaches. When you talk about Nick Nurse and Joe Mazzulla out in Boston, two former G League head coaches.
Mark Dagnall too, with OKC Blue. He
Yep.
went to the Thunder and is now the reigning NBA coach of the year.
Yeah, so it's not any BS, it ain't no bullshit when they like this really like a development, like you seeing it at all levels of the game.
Now let's take a look at an endeavor. I think we both agree that LaVar Ball's JBA League gave birth to the concept of in more ways than just one. and that's OTE, Overtime Elite, one in which the sports media company formed to feature the top 25 to 30 rising juniors and seniors, as well as postgraduate players, and have a facility out in Atlanta, Georgia, where players between the ages of 16 to 20 years old can train, study, and compete against their peers. We know former NBA player and collegiate head coach Kevin Ollie was once the head of coaching and development for Overtime Elite, a league that's produced some notable young talents you see now today, such as Amen Thompson and Asar Thompson, Rob Dillingham and Alex Sarr in the association, not to mention Ian Jackson, who, if you're into college hoops, have seen lighten up the ACC as a freshman at North Carolina and is projected, according to some mock drafts, to be selected in the first round of this year's NBA draft just a few months from now. Players can earn up to 100K in addition to equity and overtime, not to mention any revenue generated from use of their NIL rights. They also receive additional health benefits designed to protect them in the event of injury. OTE also provides players with life skills, media training, and financial literacy programs. Beside the academic component, where coursework is handled in a small class setting, which really sparked changes in the G League's framework as far as it pertained to player compensation and so forth. So just like I asked you when it came to the G League, Torrance, when you look at OTE, what would you say are the biggest advantages or drawbacks to taking this particular route to start?
Well, first of all, shout out to LeVar Ball, like you said, with the JBA. That definitely was innovative. And he's been continuing to put on events. I think they got one in April at Indiana University East. They having a JUCO showcase out there. So I think that's still dope. You can see the sincerity in his mission. You know, he got his boys to the league, and you know, the mission still continue. The Overtime Elite, I mean, we'll go back to that European Academy thing. You get to end up in a more professional setting at a younger age before you even get to the college ranks. That's the biggest advantage. And you get to play against guys primarily at your level, too. You were somebody that was standing out in your high school class, you probably going to stand out in Overtime Elite as well. You don't have to worry about going through the international struggles that Brandon Jennings and LaMelo had playing a pro game at such a early level for the G League. You get to start building up to that level at an earlier age.
I think one of the biggest advantages when it comes to playing in Overtime Elite, like you said, you playing up against your peers who are going to be some of the top players in the country. And the one thing I like about it is they also provide guys with 100K when they go to college as well. It keeps the door open for a player that might want to still go to college after his days in OTE are completed or have come to a close. That's something that I do like about it. So if you want to go to college like Rob Dillingham did, going to Kentucky following his days in OTE, you still have that option. And one of the drawbacks, would you say?
I say, and the little $100,000 scholarship, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like that a lot. And I like that they're still able to keep their NIL rights as well and receive that additional health benefits that protect them. I think that's a great component. I would say, as far as drawbacks, you're not always featured on a platform where everybody can access you. I know they have a deal with Amazon Prime, and I know that they have a YouTube page where they stream a lot of their games, but you don't get a chance to see them as much. And I think that's also one with the G League as well. But outside of that, I don't mind that being a segue or pathway, rather, for guys to utilize in an effort to get one step closer to the NBA. And I think, like I said, one of the biggest advantages is you still are able to keep your college window open in the event that you want to.
I mean, that is dope. Because I would say if you took the best player or most known player from Overtime Elite versus the G League, the guy in Overtime Elite might be more popular in a way. I don't know, you mentioned the platform, the lack of a true platform outside of the one it has for itself. But at that age, I think that's appropriate. That's cool. I could definitely see it being something that sticks around for a long time and gets more traction just because of like you pretty much get to you get to do JUCO for your last 2 years of high school in a way.
Yeah, and I like the financial literacy component of it as well, because I think that's something that one institution that we'll get into a little bit later on this show could do a better job of instilling in their component. That's still getting sorted out and fleshed out, as we know, as NIL didn't come into the picture until about 3 to 4 years ago. So I like that aspect of it, and I also like that they're actually trying to show guys just how to go about operating with the media as well. I think that's useful. I'm not saying that you got to take away from the personality of a guy. Every player doesn't always know how to interact with the media, and just discovering that for myself in grad school, working with high school athletes, some of whom ended up going to the pros, I think that's a vital thing.
Now, that's two things I'm gonna push back on, and not really against you, just the whole idea of the one, the financial literacy component. It's a buzzword nowadays. But at the end of the day, the sports world, it's a world surrounded by vultures more than anything. It's a racket. So, yeah, they could be in there telling them guys, yeah, man, you need a business manager, you need an accountant. You need this, you need that, you need that. And as they keep going up the ranks, you just keep falling into the clientele of this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And it turns into a big racket. So I appreciate guys like a Jaylen Brown who, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, guys who work themselves up to a point where, man, look, I'm a max player. My these negotiations easy. And I'm not going to discount whatever education they've given themselves to handle it. I'm sure those guys got lawyers that can handle the contract business and things of that nature. See, I don't believe that they at overtime telling them guys something as simple as that. Like, hey man, work your tail off, put yourself in a certain position, get a lawyer, and that's all you need. I'm sure they funneling them to agents and agencies and this, that, and the third. And that's a whole nother discussion for another day. But I kind of had to push back on that part of it, because not just Overtime Elite, we had a lot of other leagues that were trying to get started with a similar model. I remember David West talking about a league, Tracy McGrady, a lot of guys talking about being a part of these venture capital leagues that were trying to pop up after the pandemic. And they also talked about the media training aspect of it. I get it, guys got to know how to learn how to carry themselves professionally. But at the same time, hey man, I don't want more robots in my league as a viewer, and I just got to speak on it. I know we talking about what's good for the individual, the young man, but a part of being a man in life is balance. It is about being able to speak different languages. Like, okay, when we on this mic, we talk in a certain language. Once the camera off, once the mic's turned off, we speak in a different language. There's
That's
nothing
true.
wrong with that, but I always want guys to maintain a sense of self, because if you bring a teacher in a room to talk to 20 guys, then they all get and talk to the same way.
No, I want guys to be they self, Torrance. I'm not saying that I don't want guys
That wasn't
to
what
be
you
they
said.
self.
I'm
No,
saying it's the I said the idea of it.
I feel you, and I get where you're coming from, but you bring up how sometimes these programs will utilize that financial literacy term to funnel players in the directions that they want them to go in. And that's true. And I know that this specific podcast, we're trying to provide the solution as to what we think might be the better path for the individual talent being the high-level prep star. But just real quickly before we move into the NCAA, what's your thoughts on that? What's
Say it
your
again.
thoughts on that? What is your thoughts on how certain organizations can utilize terms such as financial literacy in a way or manner to sway guys to certain agents or representatives? Shit that we know happens and takes place, things that we've talked about over the years that have taken place. What do you think about that?
Man, like I said, bro, that's really a convert. That's a whole nother
I know
deep
it is,
dive
but
rabbit
just
hole.
real briefly. I know
I
it is.
mean, it's a societal thing, man. It's a societal thing. Separating people from what they normally comfortable with. Selling them a world that they know nothing about. So, yeah, you educating them, but you're educating them to the benefit of your world, to the system. You're feeding them into a system. All right, put it like this in short order. They're not teaching guys how to be LeBron James. That's the short order. LeBron crew, LeBron, Rich, Mav, Randy,
Randy.
those guys, they got called a posse at one point, right? But Rich Paul was selling throwback jerseys. Mav was a college educated student who played at Western Michigan. I don't know Randy. But Randy always kind of just seemed like your older cousin or your uncle that you always knew that if you ever made it, this who's just gonna be with me every day. Like I just feel good with having him here every day.
Liaison, yep.
Nah, but like I mean, I'm thinking some people that's listening that just know what they mean, like what I mean by that. Like
No, I know what you mean,
you just
Torrance.
gonna have this
I
person
feel you.
with you. Yeah, so those guys got into the NBA world. And found their way and found how they could create value for LeBron. Like, that's what guys need to learn, like, how to practice discernment in that area. Are the people around you capable of making those type of transitions? And if not, then what do those people look like? Those are the real conversations. Because, like I said, other than that, without me having firsthand knowledge, you funneling them into a racket. I mean, I'm sure it's like a selection of maybe eight agents that's gonna be able to get the pick of the litter from the guys. They gonna have access to those guys because shit, it's a lot of people invested into Overtime Elite. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know how many strings going in what direction, but I'm sure they exist. But like I said, they not teaching guys how to be LeBron. And shit, LeBron might need to get out here and teach people that. And at the same time, LeBron might just be lucky. But I'm sure it's a few guys in the league that have replicated the process. And shit, Derrick Rose with his brothers. You know what I'm saying? Like, nothing, ain't nothing getting past Reggie. And you look at certain situations in the league that have happened off the court. And it happens when guys are very young in their career. Whether you look at the guys now or you look at guys, but back then, I ain't gonna just say names right now because it ain't always necessary. And that's something people in the media need to learn. Like, you ain't gotta always bring up old shit that guys have worked their way past. But a lot of those type of incidents happen around these ages or right after these ages. And though that's what the guys need.
No, I feel where you're coming from on that. And you're right. They definitely not trying to sway you to take the LeBron James route, or as I would say, the road less traveled, or even the Derrick Rose route. You know, like you talk about Reggie Rose, his brother. I think about his best friend Randall. You know, not you gotta go through people to really get to Derrick Rose. And I
But
know
even
that
the
firsthand.
business,
And exactly.
but even like Rich is LeBron's agent, Mav is his business partner. We said Randy, he's the day-to-day man. You know what I'm saying? And those guys have like small teams underneath them. Rich has created Clutch. Mav has created Spring Hill. Guys really like, you know what I'm saying? Adding value around you. Like I remember Rich doing an interview saying down to having a barber. Like one of your friends need to just go and be your barber. Somebody needs to be the person that pick up your clothes. Like it's like a lot of those things about how to pretty much create infrastructure if you want to just dumb it down. Because you, even as an individual, these guys getting NIL money, you getting contracts, you are a business at that point. You are providing a service to a team and you still need infrastructure. And I just, like I said, I don't think they get in that kind of education.
No, I agree with you. The days of amateurism in collegiate sports are definitely over. And that's the organization that I want to get into next, is the NCAA. The pathway that we know is the most popular path of choice. And the reason as to why that is this is the go-to hub for most scouts and executives to not only see the nation's best live in action, but everybody's eyes are on it. We're seeing that right now with March Madness. It provides players who aren't eligible to get drafted with the biggest stage to perform on. It's big business. And when you see how multiple states have passed laws allowing athletes to sell their NIL rights and benefit from it without fear of being penalized for it in the wake of the NCAA versus Austin case that went to the nation's highest court, it's money to be had that can benefit a plethora of parties, as we just discussed. Now, we know that this is a system that is still fresh and that there are some facets of it that can be improved upon, as many people within the industry have bought up since coming into existence. We also are recording this on the eve of a recent NCAA ruling and court injunction that will now allow athletes who have played at junior colleges to possibly have a full four-year NCAA eligibility period, as an athlete's years spent at the JUCO level will not count against their eligibility at the NCAA level. The transfer portal has allowed guys to move freely without having to sit out for an entire season compared to the days when we were in college. What are your thoughts on the NIL in college basketball? And do you think the money combined with measurements such as these will be enough to inspire blue chip recruits and other D1 hoopers to stay in school a little bit longer before they decide to officially turn pro?
So basically, is it enough to convince Cooper Flagg, Ace Bailey, if any of those guys,
exactly,
like, man, you know what? They paying me this money, I'm going to do 2 years here. Or I'm going to stay here till I win
That's
the
what I'm getting
national
at.
Championship.
That's what I'm getting at.
It would be great. I promise you, it'll be great. It'll be great possibly for them individually, but it'll be great for the league as far as having more game-ready guys coming into the league, less of a development curve. But then, you know, we sacrificing a lot of money as well. That's interesting because, see, my main point, and I could be wrong, it could be my own personal bias, but there's nothing cool about men's college basketball anymore. Winning a national championship, that's like a personal goal, a personal dream now. But we not evaluating players on that no more like we once did. Like when Melo was one and done, we all agreed he was supposed to be one and done because he went in there and did one and done things. He went in there and won a championship as the best player in the nation. So it's like, bro, you have nothing left to do here. But that changed. I mean, Ben Simmons went number one and didn't even make the tournament. That would have been a big indictment on somebody at some point. He would have at least slid to like number three, number five, something. Like that don't even happen anymore. Then who are the new legendary coaches we got in college basketball? You know, like I could see somebody being enamored enough with the Duke thing at one point with Coach K and be like, nah, man, I'm gonna stay here and win. North Carolina used to be a blue chip program. You know, like it was certain places where I could see guys being incentivized to be like, yeah, no, I need to go win something there. But those days have long passed. It's like, shit, when Cal got his title at Kentucky, it's like it didn't matter no more. I don't even know who won the last few national championships. Like, I didn't, like, even with the Villanova guys that's in the league now. Like, I don't remember that shit. I don't even care about it. I don't think that they the Fab Five, none of that. Like, the game was promoted different. And it meant something different. I don't see them shaking that one semester mentality. I just got to get through the first semester, tournament happening, I'm gone. I don't see that happening. I would love to see it because that's what makes the women's game far better than the men's game, is the continuity. Like, I'm still looking forward to seeing Flaje. Of course, Juju Watkins, but I still remember Flaje, and she was like the third or fourth biggest figure and that whole LSU Iowa, like, you know, thing going on the last couple years. But she get that love and that support because people familiar with the name and the face. We don't got that no more with men.
That's a good point. I mean, when you bring up women's college basketball, just working in a Division I program, like my final years of school and seeing like the intricacies of it, like behind the scenes, women's college basketball is big business. Like I had the privilege of watching Breonna Stewart live when she was at UConn and the road travel that Huskies fans provided that squad with. And she played beside a young lady by the name of Morgan Tuck that happens to be from the Chicagoland area. It was a dominant force at Bolingbrook High School and captured Gatorade Player of the Year honors and so forth like that. Had a brief WNBA career. I believe she works with the Connecticut Sun now in the front office. They really support the women's game, and they go hard for their programs. And you see the fan bases rally behind them. It's a lot different. And players stick to the programs for at the minimum 3 years. That's why it was such a big deal when Jewel Lloyd left school early when she attended Notre Dame. You know, she got a lot of backlash from that. Whereas in the men's game, you don't get shunned on for wanting to do that anymore. There was a time where you used to, like the Luol Dangs of the world, even though he led Duke to a Final Four in 2004, it wasn't common to see somebody at the time leave Duke after one season. But my overall thoughts are, I don't think it's enough to inspire a blue chip high level guy, like you said, the Cooper Flags or the Ace Baileys, to stay in school a little longer. The NIL, I think, was created for guys like an Oscar Tshiebwe out of Kentucky, a guy who happened to capture National Player of the Year honors in 2022. And after doing so, had Coach John Calipari check his draft status. And, you know, Calipari ain't going to tell you no lies. He told him, hey, look, you're not going to get drafted. So what did he do? He went back to school and was able to cash out, made damn near $3 million in NIL money, and was able to utilize that money not only to take care of his mother in the Congo and buy her a house, but take care of his community as well and provide some programs and institutions to folks in the Congo, which I thought was really cool. And now you see him as a member of the Utah Jazz, and you see him primarily in the G League on the Salt Lake City Stars beside Isaiah Thomas, and he puts together some monster games. But the reason why Oscar Tshiebwe didn't get drafted, in my opinion, it wasn't that he didn't have the skill set. It just wasn't a modernized skill set. He's a traditional old school big that plays with his back to the basket as opposed to a big man like a Victor Wembanyama who could just do all things, be it inside or outside, and is all world and everything. So, like guys like him and Armando Bacots of the world, who shined in North Carolina in a tournament a couple years ago and route the lead in the Tar Heels to the national championship game against Kansas, that's who the NIL benefit. I don't think it really benefits the top guys because they looking at that money like 2.7 mil, 3 mil. Shit, I'm going to touch three times that on my rookie deal. First year alone.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The girls give so much to the game that you got to fuck with it. The thing about college and all facets of life is the most important benefit to college for most people is the network. And the same is true with the men's college basketball. You know, you got your Kentucky alumni. You got your North Carolina, Kansas. But, I mean, shit, man, we need them OGs to – it's complicated. You know, they're going to tell you to go get your money, but then at the same time, it's like, hey, young man, why don't you stay here and win something? Because I think about certain guys' careers, and I'm like, man, I wonder how it would have went if they just stayed in school.
Same.
What John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins do we get if they just stayed at Kentucky and bounced back from that loss, but they won? Like what kind of playing careers do they have? Because I'm looking at stuff like the perception of them. A lot of guys' perception, it gets created a narrative gets created at the beginning of their career and they never get to shake it. Maybe that might be the time where you can shake the narrative in college. Zion. I mean, thank God, you know, he able to get his money for his talent. You know, because, you know, his knees, whatever, like that. But man, if Zion could have been a 2-3 year phenomenon at Duke and was getting compensated, but it's like at the same time we was able to watch his game grow, watch real rivalries, watch guys go through adversity and then get to the league, we'd have a better product overall. And this whole conversation about who's the next face of the NBA in American basketball, I think we would have a more definitive answer if guys really play America's basketball game, which is men's NCAA. Like when you really talk about the country and the nation as a whole, if the game was the game, think about the numbers the Final Four would do versus the NBA Finals. It won't be close. But the basketball is a cool factor sport. It's about what we really talking about day to day. And we ain't talking about college.
No, we're not anymore. And the old guard has left the game. Like you brought up Jim Boeheim's name earlier on the show. You brought up Roy Williams' name. You brought up Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K, Chicago's finest. Like these guys are gone. And the only guys that are really standing from that era, in my opinion, are Rick Pitino and Bill Self, who was really the young man of that era. And he learned from the old guard, such as Larry Brown, during his days as an assistant on the Kansas Jayhawks before he went back to Lawrence as the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks and leaving the program in Champaign and the Illinois Fighting Illini to do that. So, yeah, the game is much different. And I do think about many a times what it would have been like to see a John Wall and a DeMarcus Cousins together for 2 to 3 years after the freshman season that they had and got to the Elite Eight where they lost to West Virginia, which oddly enough, a young Joe Mazzulla was the point guard on that team. So I think about that a lot because you don't really get a chance to know these guys' origin stories like you used to, which once upon a time began at the college level. I think about the generation that raised us. Like I look at like my father. He got a chance to see Patrick Ewing dominating in college. He got a chance to see Hakeem Olajuwon. Like guys like that. Like you're not gonna get that no more. That's what I'm saying.
We saw JJ Redick, bro. Like we ain't even gotta go that far back. Like JJ,
right. well, yeah,
JJ was at Duke.
He was.
And we knew, like, even when he got to the NBA, you couldn't even take away from the fact that, hey, when J.J. Redick was at Duke, he was the fucking man. Like, and that counted for his reputation all the way through this Lakers job. Like,
the Jay Williams of the world.
Yeah, Jay Will, Battier. Mm-hmm. Shit, Joakim Noah, Al Horford. You look at them, like, especially Al Horford. Like, when hasn't Al Horford won in his career? And they built those reputations in college. Corey Brewer, their teammate, he always got a chance on a playoff team or a contender. A lot has to do with people pointing back to the fact, hey, well, they won two championships at Florida. Same gonna help those guys in New York. So, I mean, it is value to sticking around. I mean, I'm not a greedy person, so if they told me I'm going to make, like, $10 million for staying here for about 4 years, I mean, a part of me feel like I would, but then at the same time, that's like, by the time I graduate, I could have been into year three of my NBA contract, and if you perform up to a certain level after year three, you can get that extension. And now we talking about
life-changing money.
We talking about nine-figure money.
Mm-hmm. Life-changing.
So I know that's really, they don't really speak on that a lot, but that's really the reason guys be jumping out early is because you want an opportunity to get to that max money as fast as possible that first time, because if you're lucky, you might can get a second one.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. That is the component that is the reason why I don't believe it would benefit a five-star recruit to stick around. Because when you start talking about that type of money, it is different. That money sets up generations within your family.
And they tell you and then the league don't help it either because, hey, they don't got that much footage on you. You look good after year one. You got all this potential. You go to number one pick. You stay for 4 years improve in a lot of facets of your game, but for some reason you fall down to 8, 9, 10, bottom of the lottery, because one, somebody younger with all the potential in the world who ain't proved shit you have, but they taking that away from you, and they just criticizing your game more, even though you really more game ready, because shit, you did the draft over Dalton Kincaid, he going in the top 5, top 10, right?
This year's draft? I would think so. I believe that Charlotte would have took him.
I think it's some teams that would have traded up for him that was playoff teams, knowing that, like, man, you know what? He's actually, like, league ready in a lot of ways.
But you know why that is, though. Because of his age, and guys look at the age and the lack of tape that he had with a power five, and they try to use that against him. Because remember, Dalton Kincaid was a mid-major transfer to Tennessee. And see, that's the thing, too, that makes following men's college basketball tough for some people on the outside looking in, is that you got a lot of guys that just come out of nowhere now, and you don't even really get a chance to know their story.
Like,
and
I'll
be honest,
shit.
Even as someone that follows college basketball casually, I don't follow it like I used to, but I didn't hear about Dalton Kincaid for real until a couple of months before the tournament. And the only reason why I heard about him is because I was hearing so many NBA scouts and draft analysts rave about him.
Well, you know me. I told people that's around me. Once Zion left Duke, I was done with men's college basketball. I said, we'll never get this type of hype and excitement again. And shit, I've been proven right. Like, the Cooper Flag thing's supposed to be way bigger than it is. But then at the same time, it'll be phony and fake, because we just got the real thing with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark in college. Like, we got to see them with that junior year. And even us as men and casuals, like, viewers of the women's game, hey, shit, I was ready for round two. I ain't watched none of the regular season, but I knew by the time the tournament came, I was like, I know which three teams I'm watching. No, four. I knew I was watching LSU. I knew I was watching Iowa. I knew I was watching South Carolina. And I knew I was watching Juju over there at USC. Now, ask me about men's. Could care less. Don't know.
And I will say this, as someone who watched the national championship game with a few of my friends and family last year on the men's side, there was way more talk about what happened the day before in the women's national championship game between Iowa and South Carolina than there was about the national championship matchup between Purdue and UConn. And a UConn team led by Dan Hurley that happened to become the first team since Florida in 2006, 2007 to repeat as national champion. That's something when you really sit back and think about it, to really make you think just how far in terms of popularity the men's college game has fallen. But we broken down the pros and cons when it comes to taking a G League and overtime elite route. The recent changes that have taken shape in the NCAA and whether it's enough to encourage young talent to stay in school. Now, we know every kid is different, but say you have one in front of you who is the five-star recruit that has all of the offers from the top programs, but has aspirations to be in the NBA very soon. I know you got a lot of thoughts and opinions on this topic, and that's why we want to bring it to the light and talk about this here on Second Chance Point. What advice would you give him in his decision when it comes to picking the best choice? But let's just say it was you. Which path would you take?
Asking a non-basketball player this question. I'd say, just outside looking in, the first and short answer is you're going to go ahead, if you could, you go to a college situation that's going to benefit your draft stock. If you are this high-level recruit, hey, you go put yourself in a situation where you can showcase the game you're supposed to showcase. You take a guy like Cam Reddish, his whole career, NBA career, might be different if he just went to a different school, because you over there with Zion, and then you over there with ball-hogging-ass R.J. Barrett. Yeah, because bro was used to be wilding at Duke. I couldn't understand why he just felt the need to always have the ball. So you definitely want to end up in the best situation for your game. You that five-star type of recruit, you want to get to that second contract in the NBA as fast and as young as possible. Now, if you realistic about your game, if you know you might be a specialist, or you need some more time and work, I'ma still say college, bro. I might say you go get them, do them years in at school. Go be a legend at your school. Go break the school records or some shit, man. Like, they paying you some money. You know, if you can make multi-millions on the NIL deal, you're not really that greedy. Yeah, you can run it up in school, learn how to invest, educate yourself. And if your draft stock fall, it might not be the worst thing, because the further you fall in the first round, the chances of you landing on a better team. And if you a guy that ultimately turns out to be a non-all-star, but somebody that can carve out a role for himself, you might have a great basketball legacy. Create a name for yourself at a particular school that you can always go back to, and you might end up in a situation in the league where you might not be max contract, man, but you might stick in the league 10 to 12 years just based off the fact you stayed in school, you know your game, you know your role, you know how to conduct yourself, be professional. I would still go that route. I love the Bronny route too, in a way. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, pretty much high school to G League, honestly. I think that route dope as well, because hey, if you got the guaranteed NBA contract money now, shit, go in there and like really just learn, build relationships. You never know who these assistant coaches, head coaches, and all of these people can be. And like we spoke about, you are in the system of the team, the organization. But all in all, I'd still say that NCAA, they still holding on tight. Ideally, I would love a combination of in a perfect world, we'd have a combination of the G League and Overtime Elite with a college, a NCAA platform.
Yeah, I get where you're going with that. And I think over time, that's something that is going to be interesting to follow, because we know that there are plenty of people out here with deep pockets that want to see more basketball being played, or have thought about potentially putting together leagues down the line, be it stateside or not, that could benefit young players of tomorrow that have these NBA aspirations. I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I would give a kid when it comes to deciding which pathway to take, know your game. Because like you said, it's very important when it comes to picking a college that can help you to maximize your draft stock. Don't just necessarily go to a school because you dreamed of putting on their colors. Get to know those coaches. Get to know the assistant coach that's recruiting you. Ask them what role they see you playing, and think about the role that you want to play on a team. But also be real with yourself, because like you say, everybody's not going to be a star. Everybody's not going to get that max contract, but you can put together a 10 to 12 year career for yourself. And if you do, that's good enough to get a full pension. That's a thing that a lot of guys don't think about either, looking at it from a business standpoint. As far as which path would I take, personally, if I was in their shoes, yeah, I would go to college. I would, because I know best case scenario, if I pick the college where I'm able to maximize my talents or use my talents in the most effective system, I could put myself in a position, hopefully, to get to the league. But even if I don't, right, if I go to one of the schools that I look at as a Big Five institution, a UNC, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, UCLA, you look at like the alumni directory NBA-wise for those schools. Some of those guys that happen to be products of those schools are in front offices. You never know where that can lead you.
Especially Duke.
Exactly.
Duke run the NBA damn near.
Yeah. And even North Carolina, you look at guys like a Mitch Kupchak, you know, who's been a longtime executive with the Los Angeles Lakers and with the Charlotte Hornets is a recent time. Even still serves on as an advisor now since he's retired from his days as a front office executive. So, like, you got
Adam
guys like
Silver,
Kevin
right?
Pritchard.
Adam Silver, right? He a Duke alum.
Right, yeah, the commissioner of the league. But then I was even going to add, like, Kevin Pritchard, who's the executive of the Indiana Pacers, Kansas alum. Like,
Well,
it goes hand in hand. Danny Ferry, we talked about off the record. He's a Duke alum, even though his father was an executive for many years out in Washington. Like, you go to one of those big five programs, you guaranteed to find some type of role.
hey, but look, let's just step outside of like the big five part of it. That is a spectacular point. That is the point, honestly. When I spoke about college and the whole network aspect of it, we spoke about the previous episode of the New 24, Danny Ainge and BYU. And what's the kid going there, AJ?
AJ DeBonson,
and
yep.
We, come on, bro, that's an alum now. Like, he gonna have a conversation with that young man if he ain't already. And I'm sure that if dude turn out to be who they think he is, he gonna do everything in his power to keep him in Utah. You know what I'm saying? But one thing I just noticed during this show, we talked about the alumni network at, you know, these blue blood schools. We talked about the agencies. And that goes back to my point about, at the end of the day, it's still a racket. They still got you surrounded by the system where they're going to eat off of you. So, yeah, they're giving you NIL money and this, that, and the third, but they putting the money back in their pocket, essentially.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that's why I mentioned the LeBron point of, we're going to teach these young men how to invest and build businesses.
And that's something that guys definitely got to think about. And you brought up Jaylen Brown and SGA. I really like what they've been doing, especially Jaylen Brown and his quest to try and break free of it in the way that he deems fit. And I think he's still figuring it out for himself, but I think that's a great thing because what he's doing is he's showing that there's another alternative. Something that, of course, we give credit to LeVar Ball for doing through his son as well. But I think JB is trying to take it to a different level, and I just respect that, man. I really like it.
And another person too, Jeff Teague, you know, speaking on this topic in a way some weeks back, where he was saying he recommends to all these young guys, hey, man, find a school or a situation that they in love with you and what you got going on, and they want to be a part of your growth and your development. Don't just end up in a situation where, hey, man, if you ain't meeting expectation, they done with you, and they'd like to get this NIL money or this scholarship money to the next guy. I really think that that was a very important lesson for guys to have.
Yeah, I know some guys firsthand that were five-star guys, can't miss talents. I'm pretty sure if they could do it all over again when it came to selecting the schools that they attended, they would do a lot of things differently. I won't put their names out there, but for those who know me, they know who I'm talking about. And that's a fact. There's a lot of guys that's like that. And I know some guys that had that story in other parts of the country as well, as it pertains to people that they know that were high-level players and talent, but didn't really get a chance to maximize off of it because of making a decision that didn't prove to be their best one. And unfortunately, that's just the hardcore reality of the game.
And making the NBA is hard. Like, that's the other thing, man. Like, it's so much talking. You see so many young people because of the internet, and this kid going to be in the league. And like, dog, it is only 450 spots. And we talking about you trying to make it out of the ranks of the next 450, essentially. And that's hard. So, man, and I think that was the last point I want to make, and that was a point Teague made about just the nature of a career. You blow your knee out, or, you know, you had a 10, 12-year career. But guess what? That means you a 32, 33-year-old man, so around the same age we are. Hey, man, like, hey, yeah, you can start over at 32, 33. A lot of us not even where we want to be at. A lot of us are trying new careers and transitioning. But like Teague said, man, when you've been working your whole life to become a professional basketball player and you look up and it's suddenly over, You still got to figure out who you are and how you fit into the real world. And that's a part, you know, like I said, I hope guys continue to get better development and understanding about, man, so we see less stories about players being broke and mental health issues and guys going through depression because they separated from the game. Like, and a lot of this stuff starts at this age. These decisions at this time period. It's a lot for it to weigh and to be conscious of, but I think in every scenario we talked about the importance of mentorship and guidance along the way.
Yeah, you definitely got to be careful who you're letting into your circle, like you brought up with the point that you made with LeBron James and how he's managed his infrastructure alongside of Derrick Rose. That's a must, especially in this day and time where your whole life can change just in one instant, in one situation, one game, rather. You know, you show out in front of a camera, and next thing you know, you're on YouTube, you get millions of views, and all of a sudden, offers coming left and right. Do you know how to handle that? Do you know what position you want to take and make in the game, let alone which path you want to go down? Well, that concludes this episode on What's the Better Path to the Pros on Second Chance Points, an extension of the New 24 podcast. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard in this particular episode, as well as all the other episodes that you may have listened to throughout the course of the 2024-25 season thus far, then please feel free to give us a 5-star rating with additional comments across the podcast platforms you use to listen in to us each week, as we truly appreciate all your support. Please make sure to check out episode 19 of the New 24 podcast, where me and Torrance just recently discussed the play of the Minnesota Timberwolves, what to make of Anthony Edwards' fifth season with the franchise, in addition to the Houston Rockets, the Washington Wizards, and Utah Jazz. You can also follow the official social media channels for the New 24 podcast as well across Instagram and X at TNTF underscore to get all of the latest updates that you need as it pertains to future episodes and more. Plus, subscribing to our official RSS feed to make sure that you have the latest episode from the moment it drops at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, we thank you once again for listening to yet another edition of Second Chance Points. So long, everybody.